Father in heaven, thank you for your mercies to us. We pray that you would bless our schools, that we honor you by what we do and how we do it, and glorify you at all. And we pray, Father, that you give us wisdom and how to learn and grow as institutions. May you help us to see that we always have that room to grow and to improve, and with the higher grace, help us to do it as young institutions that we are. We ask, Lord, that you give us time together in Jesus' name. Amen. Let me provide some context to what I'm going to say. I have a few notes up here. I have about 50 copies of basically some of the raw data, if you will, the average numbers. But I want to put the caution in here that the numbers, like all statistics, can be misread and misunderstood. And so I want to be sure to qualify everything that's in there as we go. But I want to start with just an observation or two that I hope will set the context for what I'm after in the talk generally. I was asked to do this talk with regard to the trends of graduates from ACCS schools coming to a school like New St. Andrews. How do they do? What are we seeing? What's the effect of that? And I tell parents and prospective students when they come, a couple of things that I want to share with you that I hope sets that context for this discussion. One of the things I say is that let's say you're from the Southeast or Texas, or you're a long ways from Idaho, and you're a parent of a daughter, and you're thinking, I don't know that I really want to send my daughter all the way to the other end of the earth, to the edge of the earth for some, and think about it as that's too far away, and I'm just going to think about that. And those are all good and right concerns for a parent to have. And my point is that in thinking that through, though, many parents have the problem, and I think schools have the same, is that they think that proximity or closeness means a bond, that mere proximity takes care of those problems. And I point out to parents that if you have a child who is edgy, doesn't really like what they're getting in school, they're not really happy with what they're doing, and they're pushing against you all the time, the proximity in that context, you realize, might as well be 10 miles away. And the kid that loves what you love, the child that just eats up everything you offer, you don't have to worry about where they are. They could be 10 miles away, but because they love what you love, you're not worried that they're going off the deep end because they love what you love. And proximity is not the issue. And loving what you're trying to teach your students is to love what you love. And if you don't love it, they're not going to love it. As a parent, if you don't love them and let them know that you love them, then the distance doesn't matter anymore. Well, I think there's that analogy plays right into what we're looking at here in terms of how students respond when they go away to college. You can do the best job of imparting information, of putting data into their heads, but if they don't love what you love, when they get to college, it's not going to really matter. Right? I mean, they'll have that perhaps as background data floating around, and maybe in a few years it'll pop up on their radar screens. Oh, I should have paid attention to that more, as we almost all do. But it's that distance in emotional owning of it. It's the thing that I think Ken Myers was referring to today, where when you talk about enculturation, when you think about what classical education is doing, you always have to go back to, it seems to me, Ephesians 6:4, and look at the nurture and admonition of the Lord. The word there is paideia for nurture, total enculturation, as most of you know. And that's the kind of thing that, if it's happening at the high school level, those secondary years, if that enculturation is occurring, then it's probably going to be a very good thing when you go on to the college level. And if it didn't happen, then there's a whole bunch of remedial stuff, either spiritually or academically or something, that's going to have to happen. So that role of enculturation that's occurring at your secondary level schools is really, really important, and it really matters at our end when we finally get those students, because Some we know will just fit right in and do wonderfully, and they own it right from the beginning. And others are just, you know, my folks made me come here. I don't really want to be here. You know, and they resist, and the emotional distance is miles away. As a college, we see the fruit of the secondary school's work, and we also realize that that fruit is not always the best examples that you have to offer. I know, for example, from the East Coast, again, cultural differences are really important here. East Coast culture is very different than West Coast culture, and we know that a lot of the students that are the best and brightest out East might not come from the St. Andrews. So it's not necessarily the cream of the crop from the East that we get. But it's also the fact that they do come a long distance when they do come, and they're not at home. It's not their culture. So there's going to be adjustments that they have to face that perhaps they never had to face before, and that affects things like performance. So when we look at the scores here and sort of divide it East and West, you'll see that the East Coast students have not done as well generally. But I think those two factors are pretty important, is that they're not necessarily the top students that came out of the schools that they came from, and they're a long way from home, they're adjusting to the environment, and they're having to make those things. The West Coast kids have fewer adjustments that way, and it's made that easier. I also want to point out that we are in this together. We really are. As you raise the kids up through the secondary level, hopefully what you're thinking is not that you're just a pony prep school for the best schools out there, but the classical model and vision for education is something that you see as important long-term, as something to be continued and not really cut off like you did it, been there, done that, now it's time to move on to the Voc Tech Behemoth University program as your first way of thinking about it. But you're actually thinking, this is something that for generations, for 1,000 years before us, was still being done at the college level, and then students went on to master something. That idea has fallen out of favor in the dominant paradigm, and I hear a lot of Christian schools and ACTS schools are still kind of moving along with that paradigm, that cultural paradigm, which I would want to encourage you here to think about as a problem. It's not the case that the schools of today, the universities of today, are what they were perhaps when you went through an institution. The very cultural shifts that Ken Meyer was talking about, the postmodern shifts, the radical secularization things going on, make the university a much more hostile environment for students, and the educational quality and level can drop precipitously at the very places where the students should be improving and growing. They're getting much more remedial level sorts of things and declining. Now, we have the opposite problem, is that for a student that comes out of a lot of ACCS schools, they'll be fine at most state institutions because they're going to be near the top. But as soon as you get into higher level institutions, you find that the students that you get from ACCS schools are good and they adjust well, but they're not necessarily as great as we thought they might be. There's still a lot of room to grow. There's still a lot of things that happen in their experience that didn't necessarily help them out. And just another example or qualifier here. If you compare homeschooling to institutional schooling, we have a lot of homeschoolers now. I think we're somewhere around, what is it? It's like 44% in our history. We've had 44% homeschoolers. We're now, I think, at 54% for this coming year. We continue to have more homeschoolers than anything. But one of the interesting comparisons between homeschoolers and ACCS kids is that the institutional experience of a child going through school is that sometimes if they didn't learn their lessons very well and they got the lower grade because of it, they still went on to the next grade, right? Well, homeschooling parents may not put up with that. And so they'll say, wait a minute, you got a C in grammar? You need to know your own language. You're going to keep working on that, boy. And they'll keep pushing them until they get it. But institutional pressures push kids along through the system, and some of them never get it. And it shows up then in college where we ask them to write a paper. And we go, you had a 3-point what in high school? And you can't write a paper? It's that kind of problem that we bump into. Logic, basic grammar skills, and the language skills, particularly in Latin, we see all kinds of variations. The very good are very good, and the rest are highly uneven, and a lot of them have been pushed along where they didn't get the pressure to perform well and to actually own it or master it in some way. They just drifted through. And so these kind of things show up in all kinds of ways in our experience. The other thing I should say is that the statistics that we're looking at here are, again, relatively small number. It's just the total N. They're a low number. And I don't want you to think that the 100th percentile point there means much. It changed radically when you're looking at a small N. You know, one or two kids flips it around. So don't look at these as hard numbers. Look at them more in terms of general indicators. And I believe the general numbers are helpful because I think they do, in our experience, when I looked at these numbers as they finally came out, they do look about right. But they're not, they're not hard numbers for you to latch onto. Let me run.
I'm sorry. Is there a handout?
There is an empty chair. I only made about 50 of them. I do have more left and right, so let me know if you want more. Let me just run through the numbers briefly, and then I have some comments at the end. I'd like to leave time for Q&A as much as possible. First, the comparisons between ACCS graduates and other private and Christian school graduates. On the standardized admission tests and the students that we get, the ACCS students generally do very well on the standardized tests. Our average for ACCS on the SAT is 1212. And just for context here, because that doesn't mean much to you, most universities will have an honors program that usually starts at 1200. So that means, on average, our students would be the equivalent of honors students at most universities. Okay, so that's good. Right? That's it. Yeah.
When you say 1212, is that just the reading and math subject?
Right. Right.
You're not trying to write anything.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that still is an uneven. It's not used consistently, and nobody really knows what to do with it. And the other private Christian schools are coming in at like 1169, so a little bit lower. Again, the numbers here are just under 100 for each of those groups. So again, that's not a huge N, but in our experience, that's about right. Most of our ACCS kids are coming in right around 1200. Of course, you are going to have those that come in. I think our highest SAT has been 1570, and our lowest has been 560 or something. So you're fine with that. So big range, but still the average of the students that come are in 1212. The ACT is a little less discriminating that way because it's a smaller number scale that they use, but average is 2726 on that, so very close in the main. And I would say in the main, because of the nature of our school, the kids that come from other Christian schools do have a harder time adjusting. The ACCS kids have more of a sense of what they're likely to get into, and so there's just a little easier for them to move in and do well earlier. The Christian school kids that haven't had the classical exposure come in, and it's a little more of a shock. They struggle with Latin, perhaps, and some of the standards and the levels that you're expected to perform at. They just don't do as well. And that shows up in the grade point averages below, where our average ACCS students are at 3.18, and the other private Christian school kids are at 2.88. And again, this is a range, 88 grade, you're going to have some almost 4.0 types and some that are off the charts at the bottom. What would have been nice, but I couldn't do it for this, was to show the degree of variance that you have here. But the ACCS kids cluster pretty well, so there's not a lot of wild variation there. They cluster pretty well. And also, you see the honors students underneath the GPAs. right below in the same chart is the honor students that we've had of those groups. 38% of the ACCS kids that ended up on our honor roll, which is 3.5 and above, and only 22% from other Christian schools. So compared to Christian schools generally or other private schools, our ACCS kids are doing pretty well. Okay? So that comparison point is good. When we look at homeschool graduates in the next two charts, the SAT, the homeschool kids are coming in a little bit higher, 1221 as opposed to 1212, and a little bit lower on the ACT. But we, by and large, the SAT is where we have the highest numbers. Most people do the SAT, so that is the more important one to look at for comparison purposes. And again, I think the homeschoolers are doing better in that for the reason I mentioned earlier, is that they're working at owning the material or mastering the material before they move on, and not just getting pushed through the needs of the institution from one grade to the next. And I think that's something, if you think about just the dynamics of an institution, the more we can do something along those lines, it's like we have to do it eventually. When you get to that remedial point, if a child's not doing well in a particular subject, they need to, you need to have the parents know that so they can work with the child in that area so they do have it better for the next year. If that doesn't happen, then they're at a deficit for the rest of the way through, and then we get them, and there's that really remedial study problem that we have to deal with. On the grade point averages, again, they're very close. And I would say that the homeschoolers typically have done as well or better. And I make that conclusion again. Homeschoolers have typically done as well or better than ACCS students. Now, many of them come, because of the nature of our institution, very self-selecting. Many of them do come with some Latin and classical studies background. And so it's not like they're coming in out of the blue. But at the same time, they are coming in with a work ethic and a sense of focus that sometimes the ACCS students don't have. So we'll tend to have more homeschooling students who are excelling than we do ACCS students. And I think that, again, there's a homeschooling school culture thing at work there. But there's a little more pressure to do well amongst the homeschoolers than there is in the ACCS. Questions on that first page? Yeah.
Are most of your homeschooling students coming from that area?
Yeah. Our students come from 37 states, 7 foreign countries.
No, but I'm saying, okay. Are the ACCS coming from a broader range, and are more of your homeschooling coming from?
No, they're from all over. About 45% of our students are from the Southeast. Yeah, it's pretty evenly divided. At one time, we had more students from Maryland than any other state. Texas is now at its second. Okay. Other questions? Okay, second page, the comparisons of different ACCS schools. I just pulled one year because I should mention we've switched to a new data system, which is wonderful, but some of the reporting functions in the system aren't up and running yet. And so I had anticipated having a lot more comparative stuff to work with. I just apologize. It's a function of being able to access our data, which I could not do in the transition we're in. So these are the measures that I was able to pull. And as you'll see at the top, I simply lumped the West Coast and East Coast schools together that we currently have of ACCS students. We've had students from other places at other times, but for this year, 2007-2008, the most recent year, so this is the live data from this last year, these are the schools that we have represented. Washington, Idaho are the biggest numbers here. Okay, so that means a good number from Logos are in the West group. But it's not just Logos. It is like Providence School over in Seattle, Oaks in Spokane. So. And the schools in the East, again, smaller numbers there, 11 students from Alabama, Arkansas, Maryland, and North Carolina. Yes?
Are How many kids do you have from Logos? So they're kind of progressing through the same system.
I don't know the total number. This coming year, I think we're going to have 7 Logos students from their graduating class, which is the most we've ever had. For several years. I don't know if I need this. I always feel like I stand at a comedian when I have a whole bunch of students. For several years, we've had almost no Logos students. And part of it goes back to the idea that because they have done it at the high school level, they figured they have done it. And as I think all of our ACCS graduates now know, that was not the case. There's a lot more for them to learn than they thought there was about fostering education. But it is a good number. I think right now we're probably somewhere around 10% Logos students. But again, it's not huge. Okay, so on the top one, the standardized admission tests, you can see that the East Coast kids have actually done better than the average overall, but the West Coast kids in this current class have done extraordinarily well. And the 1,368 is it's not where you have just one outlier who's got the big 1,500 score and everybody else is 10. That is a grouping of very bright students. I think we have 3 national merit finalists in that group. So there's a good group of very bright kids. Again, I think part of this is the problem I mentioned with the distance and the culture and so on, that if we were to look at the very best East Coast kids coming through, at least in the very best West Coast kids, they'd be on par. There's no doubt about that. So that take that for what it's worth. And GPA is sort of tracking with that. The students are doing above B work from the West and slightly below B work in the East. And the average is right around the B level. So again, I don't know what you can make of this in terms of whether it's helpful or not, but I think the thing that I did notice was that the students coming in are tracking more with their SAT and ACT scores than I would have imagined. There is a pretty good predictor level there. I know it's not true nationwide. There's a lot of criticisms of the SAT and ACT scores, but our students are tracking pretty closely to with what they come in with is kind of where they're ending up. Long term. I should mention too, the total numbers on the first page there, the 479 students. I went through, for this today, I went through every single file. All 497, I looked at every student, just to see what kind of students we had and what they were doing at one time, and kind of comparing them all, looking at them that way. So I think I know this, and I know them personally, but I think I know their records, their performance records, pretty well on this, and I think the conclusions at the end, I think, will be helpful, I hope, for you. In classical languages, you can see here that the West Coast kids have done generally better, and the East Coast kids poor, and I attribute this, again, to some of the cultural differences, and I think to some of the school differences. I think there is a difference in the quality of language instruction that's going on and the ownership of it. And I think if you look at Latin instruction, you probably know this in your schools, look at Latin instruction, you'll have people who are teaching it who kind of have to do it or they're not excited about it. And you can tell the difference very quickly in how the students receive it. And I see that often happen. And the homeschool kids have the advantage over against the ACCS kids, because they pick and choose what they want. If they don't like a teacher, they'll grab a different instructor and go on some online tutorials until they get the one they like and work with. And that tends to mean that the homeschool kids do pretty well in their Latin skills, and not always the ACCS kids shine their way, you might like them to. So the homeschool kids have pushed the ACCS Latin kids pretty hard. In mathematics, this has been one of our real trials the last couple of years. Last year, the freshman class, 40% of the students failed the first term. That's the worst it's ever been. 40% failed. And the teacher was frustrated no end because he said, they don't even understand basic logic. I'm having a hard time getting them to understand the logic of mathematics. They're not seeing it. And it was a pretty even divide. It wasn't just ACCS kids. It was across the board, homeschoolers and public, or, you know, all groups, public schools, Christian school kids. It didn't really matter. It was every group was represented well in 40% of the class. And this was actually two classes, so it was a total of 60 students, 40% failing. That's a huge failure. And you might say, what kind of teacher do you have? Well, previous year and the following year was fine, but this group that came through really melted down. But it's continued to be the difficulty for mathematics teaching that we're doing for the students that have basic understanding, basic math, basic logic. He said, you just showed us, look at, I'm dumbing this down to this point, and they're still there. What am I going to do? And so we're moving now to a diagnostic test for students, and basically saying, we can't trust, you have 1,200 SAT, and you can't do basic math. And math, by the way, is always the lowest on the score. It's always the lowest. So we're going to do remedial work with them in advance. We don't want to get into remedial classes. We're not going to do that. We're basically going to say, take this test. If you score below this, you need to do something. Go online, read these books, go through these problems. But you need to get up to the level where you can do these kinds of things. So at least for my math professor, if you do nothing else, crank up the math. Because they really are struggling in mathematics. And I know that's true at all schools, where math has always been a trial, but it's really been bad in the public. Yeah.
What's the content of that first-year math course?
The first-year math class, year-long course, that should be easy for anybody who's had a decent bit of math, because it takes you through essentially the history of mathematics and shows why one type of math could not solve certain kinds of problems that people were bumping into, and then they jump into, algebra and go from Euclidean geometry, algebra, trig, and so on. You move up through into calculus, and it's taught so that they understand the problems that are trying to be solved, not just memorizing formulas. So if you just gave them a book and said, okay, memorize these formulas, do these math problems, they might get that. But they wouldn't understand why they're doing it and what it means and how it's valuable in the real world. So it's not an intensive math class in the sense that we're just crunching, crashing through calculus or something. It starts at very basic levels and runs you up through making, each term takes you along that route.
So it's conceptual, it sounds like.
Yeah.
And SAT measures computation.
And so, but then this is back to the basic logic stuff. They can't figure these things out easily, and they're struggling. So logic and math, and we always say this anyway, if you want to see how a student will perform in college, look at their math skills and their language skills. I can tell when a student does Latin or math whether they're going to be a good student, because the discipline of moving along through those is cumulative, and it's step by step, and if they can't do that, they're going to, you can talk about literature for a long time, filibuster, and get away with that. You can't do that with a math problem. You can't do that with language. And so the students that like to filibuster and do speech a lot, they'll be great, but they're not going to go very far.
That was fun. Diagnostic test available to ACCS.
Yeah, our goal is to do that. Because what we'd like to be able to do is say, here's a level we think a student ought to be at in order to come to college.
and you ought to expect them to be kind of at that level too. If we're just trying to find where that bar is, you know, we should be pretty close on that, and not have students only be up this far, and we're starting here, and you know, we need to bring those together.
It also seems to me to bring out the importance of word problems in terms of thinking, because anybody can be a math monkey, and if the concept is that, we make 10 problems on X, they can crank that. But when you give them word problems that are more intricate, they require more thinking. That's where my daughters in particular are very different deficit. And that's where I want to focus on some of it, because, you know, it's just difficult to tangle a couple different strategies.
And there's all kinds of things like that, too, like, you know, math classes that allow students to use, you know, their calculators can be fine in certain contexts, but if they haven't learned the principles, then the calculator is just the magic box that gives the answer, and they don't, you know, might as well be booted. They don't know so much.
Do you have statistics about your Latin? Because I'm thinking some schools stop Latin, like maybe at 9th or 10th grade, and they pick up another language, and then they come in, and Latin is predominant with you, and there's that gap of a couple of years, and that gap is major.
Yeah. I don't have any statistic on that, but what we started doing a number of years ago was introducing a Latin jumpstart class. Because, again, we really aren't trying to do remedial work, but we knew that there'd be some students that had Latin long ago, and they just were so rusty, they needed to jumpstart.
Because someone from the public sector, they may not have had it at all.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, we have that challenge. Imagine the top student from an ACCS school and a relatively marginal student from a public school, and we get them. So you know, juggling that can be a real challenge. Okay.
I just want to clarify, did you say that the Latin and the math performance were the most important predictor as to how the students were doing?
The most consistent predictor.
Across
the board. Across the board and everything. Because it's going to show me whether they have mental discipline. Can they follow a logical argument? Can they stick with the step-by-step process? A student bounces all over the place. Doesn't have the discipline to work with grammar and logic and math. They're going to just have trouble analyzing things. So, you know, it's going to show up in all other places. So, you know, it's just kind of that point. When we see low math scores on the SAT or ACT, That puts a yellow or a red flag on that student for admissions. Because we know, we just had too many years of this now, where we thought, well, they have, you know, they're really bright kids. And then they come and they can't do it.
It's a lack of mental discipline?
Yeah, it's a lack of mental discipline that's not been instilled in them along the way, and it shows up in those places. And they'll say, and this is the great excuse, you've no doubt heard this, oh, I'm just not very good at languages. Mm-hmm. Not true. You may have some mental problem relative to language, but I guarantee that 90% of the people who say that simply have a problem with self-discipline.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
Okay. Can I ask you a real quick question on that, since we're on the topic? I'm a Latin teacher in high school, and we're actually working on a Latin mastery program, because I'm completely of the opinion you are that Latin and math is two best indicators of students' actual mental capabilities. And so my question is, you said that you were thinking about making your diagnostic test for math available. We're working on a mastery program at our school in Latin, and it would be very interesting to me if your Latin people came up with just like a diagnostic test in Latin. I mean, I know what I expect of my students by the end of the course, but it would be interesting to see where the bar is in terms of where you guys stand. I think it would add more weight and emphasis to what we're doing.
Yeah, I don't know that we're planning a diagnostic in Latin yet, but we probably will. You know, we have a global week online exam, the National Biblical
Test,
as soon as we take. We're basically going to try to do something like that with several of these things where they'll be online and you still can know. But just one point about Latin, and this is going to be scary for a few years, I think, for everybody, is we are moving to spoken Latin and Greek completely. Mm-hmm. So we're not just doing the, you know, cram the vocabulary and translate the page and call that good. We're doing it in spoken form and
what's really been sunny, I'll just share this with you. I sat in the first term, that's only 7 weeks. We have 8 week terms. And I sat in the exam, the oral exam, we have all oral exams, and sat in on the Greek exam for one student. The entire exam was in Greek. The student never once went, he had a conversation with the instructor all the way through, answered all the questions in Greek. There was no English, period, through the entire hour exam.
Well, it's just living in the language, you're never going to have a good usage of it.
Right. But it was just fantastic. But the problem we're going to have, and you can see it coming already, is not all schools can do that. And so we're going to have students coming who have never spoken a lick of it other than trying to stumble through a reading of a text before they translated it. And that will be a new challenge. We know that. But one of the things that it gives us a little bit of a break for this, because we're able to kind of start back at the beginning for everybody and start to bring that up from the ground up again and just start thinking more. So even the kids that have, say, 8 years of Latin in an ACCS school, if they never had to speak it, it will suddenly challenge them in a new way. And really, it's fantastic what happens when they own it that way and start thinking.
You said you're doing biblical Greek.
Mm-hmm.
At our school, we're going to be doing Attic Greek, which is from the Macrophysis. I think it's a better Greek to learn.
You can't
read Plato if you don't have.
Right, the exam is in biblical Greek.
Okay.
That's exactly what we do.
Now, in terms of the philosophy of the conversation, I appreciate where you're coming from, but are you guys just adopting willy-nilly neo-Latinisms, or are you sticking pretty close to classical constructions and classical vocabulary?
Sticking pretty close. We're using lingua latina.
And so your pronunciation is?
You have to talk to Latin instructor.
I'm just curious if that's
okay. Yeah. Our Latin instructor is a graduate of the Kentucky program. Okay. You mentioned mathematics, scores there, and frightening low in some cases. And then finally in rhetoric, this gets back to the logic part of it. Students that really had trouble with the logic component of rhetoric are the ones that did poorly overall, and that's where we see the weakness. Again, it's no problem with students coming in and having a love of words, a love of rhetorical flourishes. You can have all the classical rhetorical categories, but when it gets down to their ability to think clearly, analyze, articulate those things in a disciplined way, that's not always there, and that's where the rub comes. Again, the comparisons of between schools, I think the difference is significant there, and just something that needs to be worked out. For what it's worth, I just ran all the numbers on this chart for the ACT and SAT scores for you year by year, and you can see the end there, the total number of students involved at the college, so I didn't break them out by how many were SAT and how many were ACT, just the total number of students there. And I did that in some cases for privacy reasons. But the one interesting fact to look at this is that, ACCS kids are doing pretty well, but if you look at how many times are the ACCS students are top students on average, that it's pretty evenly divided. Like homeschoolers, even some public school kids have outshone the ACCS kids on average in both ACT and SAT. So I think what I concluded from this and looking at our students individually, again, the very best from all categories of school, the top 10% of students out there, public doesn't matter, the top 10% of those students are going to do well. Because they've learned how to think, they've learned how to learn, they've got some self-discipline. You throw them into the mix, they're going to perform really well. So the top 10% are not the issue. It's the bottom under that, from the 90 or 85th percentile down, that are the ones that I'm concerned about. And they're the ones that are most vulnerable and the ones that need obviously the most attention. But when we get to that point of the students coming from ACCS schools, after that top 10%, they're not much better than anybody else, and many times they're worse. And again, compared to homeschoolers in particular. There's a question.
I just wanted a clarification question. How much time, because the private school kids are coming in at different intervals, what would you say your average time a student would have to invest under this to be included in the statistics? Because I know the long term is better, but what amount of time could we anticipate an incoming student still benefiting with this?
I guess I'm not clear on your question. I'm sorry.
How many years have they been in ACCS schools?
Okay. I'm looking at ACCS graduates. I do not know whether they came there last semester or if they've been there from kindergarten. I don't know. Okay. So I'm looking at them as, and that's how we enter the data. It's where did they finish their high school education? Sometimes it's a mix of homeschooling. It does get complicated that way. And so that's why I say statistics always have to go, you know, they're general pictures. But on average, I would say most of our ACCS kids have been all the way through high school, at least, when they come. And I think that's generally true only because what happens is the kids that are likely to bolt out of the school do it before high school. And the kids that stay in high school then stay all the way through. That's been our experience with kids that come. So, yeah.
We had a girl who came in just her senior year, and she said that her year in cost-efficient school prepared her better because of the rhetoric and that sort of thing. So we tell anybody looking for school, even 1 year can make a big difference in the tools that you get that you aren't getting at other schools. So it's really worth the time that they're there regardless.
Yes.
I have a question about the incoming students' GPAs. Did you look into that at all in terms of, here's my concern, right? Grade inflation.
Yes.
So I would like to hear from you, a college guy, what's going on in the classical schools? Are we inflating grades? What's the situation from your point of view?
My answer to that question is, are grades inflated? I would say yes.
Right.
But the high school grades do not reflect the ability of the student when they come in. So an A student at a school, you know, they've been the top student in their school when they come in. Again, it's only that relativity too, right? You know, you got your top student, probably a student, but in our mix, it might be really more of a B student, and that's sometimes really hard on the student emotionally.
So your classes coming in are pretty heterogeneous as far as ability for it being.
Because it's kind of a self-selecting institution, it tends to be more that way. But it is the case that a lot of students come in that were top students at their school. Aren't going to get good news.
It happens
at every college.
Every college,
and the more selective the college becomes, the more stark that becomes.
At the military academies, it's a
little. Right. Yeah, well, we do talk about our freshman year being kind of like intellectual boot camp, and that's as close to the military academy stuff that we do. I think it is the case that the students that perform well in high school on their GPA, that is not a good indicator of performance in college. But if I were, and some schools have said, no, the high school GPA is much better for that, not for us. The ACT and SAT are going to show us much better than the GPA. And things like letters of recommendation, too, we really don't look at those anymore.
Because they'll say,
what a great student, you know, the teacher will say, what a great student this kid was. But it's often the personal relationship stuff that may tell us that they're a good kid, and they're a great kid, but it doesn't tell us how they're going to actually perform. And that's partly where we use a pastoral evaluation to help with character things and look more to their actual student work that they submit and their SAT scores to see if those line up.
Do you have a written sample that you take?
Yes, we ask for writing samples.
Coming back to the Latin, when you look at Latin scores coming in, or you evaluate where a student is in Latin, do you look at their grades in Latin, or do you look at their National Latin Exam score? What's your criteria?
We look at, well, because they're all over math, we can't, there is no one grade. we do look at that. And again, school will often tell us a lot about the student, too. If they're coming from an ACCS school, we know most of the schools, so we kind of know if they're doing this well at that school, whether they're a good risk or not for coming in. And again, we try to include all the data when we look at a student. Like I said, the indicators of math and language are indicators of how they'll do. That doesn't mean that they did really poorly in those areas. We just dumped them. We always look at all the indicators, because the student can have a great character, great work ethic, and still not do very, very well. But you know they'll do well because they just don't quit. They just go, and they'll put out 100%. And that's the kind of student we love to have, whether they're a sort of C average student or you know, rocket scientist type. We want to see them do well up to their abilities. So we're not trying to be an elite school in that respect. It's just self-selection.
I want to just clarify, because you're talking about math on that class, your class, or at least mainly conceptual math, on those 40% that fail, were there, or you may not know, but were their SAT scores relatively high?
We did that. We ran an analysis of that to see, like, okay, did we miss something here? And some of the SAT scores were high. The ones that were low failed for sure. And we even had some of the high ones. But again, we only had in the data set that we looked at, we only had the composite score. My guess was that their math was lower of those. But we don't in the report we had.
I think it was the population.
It was 60 students. 60 students in the class and 40% of the students. Yes.
Relative to that situation, two-part question. Do you know of those 40% that failed, what percentage came from ACCS schools?
I don't know right off the top of my head. I wanted to know that, but as I said, I couldn't get out of our view. The transition, I couldn't get back to that.
Then my second more question is more one of ignorance. Do ACCS schools recommend a particular math curriculum for their students? I'm curious as to whether these students have failed. If there's any trend, I don't want to put any curriculum on the bus, but
no, I don't think there's any consistency across the board that way. If nothing else, the failure was in logic. And again, I go back to that. The failure was in logic. Less the specific math type, but probably the exposure issue is one of those, but the failure of logic. Okay, let me see if there are any other questions. Okay, let me move on then to the last page with just some observations here. And I did a grading of the area based on faculty input and the actual student performance. So I'm going through the files. One of the things we do with every student for every class, the faculty member writes a paragraph at the end of each of the four terms. They write a paragraph about the student's performance that appears for the student on the student's record. So they get just kind of like this page. They'll have, for each of their classes, they'll have a little paragraph underneath it that says, you know, you did great in this area, but not so good in this. You really need to work on such and such for next term. So,
along with a letter and numerical grade.
Yeah, and we have letter grade with that.
Okay.
So every student hears from the faculty member as to what they thought they needed to work on, or, you know, kudos for the great job they did, whatever it is. But that's in the record that we're able to look at. And when we send a transcript, those are deleted. But the student file and the student report that they get has that on. So preparedness in classical languages, I would say, with my colleagues, that it probably would get a C, and meaning really average, not that C is a failure. Okay, a real C in that it's not above average, it's kind of average. Compared to everything else we get from public schools, home schools, other Christian schools, it's about average. And part of it is going back to that issue of owning the language, and also pushing kids through who didn't really master it earlier. Those are the problems that I think we see. And so the kids in Latin are not as ready as we would want them to be. And I would suggest, going back to my earlier comment,
this is really important for their career in college. Their ability in languages is going to matter. And the more you help them in that regard, the better their performance will be overall, and I think for the future will be a blessing to them. The less they're well prepared, the less well they do in college, and that will be something to hold them back long term. So it really is important. The classical curriculum here matters a great deal long term. I think it should start to show up right here in that area. So as I say, many ACCS Latin students are not disciplined adequately in the language. There's not discipline in it. And our shift to spoken language will quickly separate, I think, the better prepared from the marginal prepared. I think that's a challenge we have in making that kind of move. A preparedness in mathematics, C minus, I was probably generous there. I'd given this to my math instructor to evaluate. He would have said probably any kind of things here. Just been very frustrated this last year. Again, ACCS students will generally do better than average, and they'll do much better in this category, much better than homeschooling kids. Math is really bad in homeschooling circuits. Mostly because parents don't know math, and they're kind of intimidated by it, and so on. So our homeschooling kids really struggle here, but the ACCS kids aren't far behind. And so poor performance is often linked to a lack of basic logic and limited social math at high school level. Preparedness in rhetoric, I would say B minus here. In every area except the logic component, the kids do fine. You know, public speaking, basic writing is okay, although we're now starting to have a lot of problems with basic grammar, which I find kind of interesting. You know, the whole grammar component to the classical model. And trivia, we're struggling with students not knowing basic English grammar. In fact, our Latin and Greek professors over several incarnations, generations back to 1994 when we started, their frustration has been that the students don't know English grammar. Okay? So you can't talk about the parts of speech in a class when you're dealing with Latin because they don't know English. And so the more you can do there to strengthen that, the better off. Again, these are so fundamentally crucial to the student's life, not just at college, but long term. So getting grammar, math, logic down pat is going to make everything better for all of us. B minus in preparedness in the arts, letters, humanities. The one thing I would say here is that while many in the ACCS schools have had a good exposure to a great deal of great stuff, there tends to be, I fear, still a cockiness here that, you know, I read Homer. I've done Homer. I know. And of course, it only takes one lecture from one of our professors to just go, oh, I guess I've done Homer. But they come in thinking that because they read it, they know it. And it's a bit like, you think about scripture. Yeah, I read the Bible once. Great. But you know it, you live it, you own it. And that's the kind of, I think that needs to be encouraged in their thinking about the literature that they're exposed to as well. That there's much more to plumb than what they've seen. For them to think that they've been there, done that, is to really reveal their ignorance rather than their knowledge. And I encourage you to whip out of them. Work ethic and self-discipline, I have down C plus there, but this is where the very good aren't extraordinary. Okay, your very best students are just absolute delights in every way. And the students that aren't are ones that have kind of been pushed through the system and don't have that discipline, and sometimes are really a trial because we know they know better. We know that they've had great exposure and they never took advantage of it and they never, you know, owned it. And that's a frustration. And as you all know, it's that, you know, bottom 10% to take 90% of your time. And that's where, you know, in terms of our faculty frustration with the students that don't do so well, who should have done well, but didn't, that's where the break goes in. Ability to meet firm deadlines. I think ACCS students are very good generally about that.
again, compared to homeschoolers, homeschoolers have a terrible time with deadlines because they've had that flexibility all the way through. So the institutional pressures of an ACCS school are great on deadline meeting, but again, the problem was pushing students who weren't ready. The homeschoolers were great about staying back and owning it, but they took forever to do it. And, oh, you mean I have to read City of God by Friday? What? I can't read every word and contemplate its meaning and look it up in the encyclopedia? You know, they can't do that. So the deadline issue is a problem with more homeschoolers than ACCS kids. So generally good grades there. Prepare to read, write, and think at the college level. Again, all the weaknesses I just mentioned, I think that's where that grade comes in. And encouraging teachable spirit and respect for teachers and others, I think this is where you shine at this point. Again, it's uneven, it's not always consistent, but I would say that's the one thing that the ACCS schools are doing a great job at. And that really makes a huge difference in terms of working with the kids in the sentence. They are a delight to work with. They're respectful. Even the ones that we have the big problems with academically, they're not disrespectful. You know, they're not a problem that way. They're good kids that learn, you know, what they did from your schools and learn to respect and love their teachers and so on. So it's sometimes really hard to work with a kid who's saying, well, you know, we're going to have to drop you out of the program, or you're going to have to go back to fewer courses or whatever it is. And very few times are they fighting that. And they understand it. Just that the discipline wasn't there sometimes in advance to help them get over it. And spiritual maturity, standards for student culture. Again, good here in the main. I think that is something that we really try to work on with the men. And I would encourage you in your schools to think about the discipline of young men in particular. The girls really are easy that way. I mean, they're not difficult to deal with. It's the guys. And guys that come in who have not been well disciplined and have maturity in those things are the ones that cause the biggest challenge for us. And again, lack of self-discipline among men is always a challenge. Immodesty for the girls. Those are the two things we deal with.
There's something we can work with the students as they come in for the men, the lack of self-discipline. Is there anything that you could give to us in terms of what you do or what?
Yeah, it's a little bit different, I think, for the college level, because the young men are on their own.
Yes.
You know, when you're dealing at the high school level, you're addressing the parents more. Like, would you slap with them?
Well, we don't need to instill it. If they don't have ownership, right. We don't help them to get ownership at the high school level. They're not
going to
carry that.
Over. Right, that's right. And parents need to understand that as well at the high school level. But, you know, they can't send their troubled child off to us and think that we're somehow going to magically fix that.
So it's educating them.
Right, so it's educating them. But we have, at the beginning of every year, we have an orientation, 2 days of orientation, and we always give what we call the fathead talk to guys. And we're pretty much in the face of the young man from the get-go. Mostly because we know that if there's going to be trouble in the school, there will be a guy behind it. If it's a girl that's not doing well, there's probably a guy behind it. Men lead. They really do. And they lead badly sometimes in our marriages and everywhere else. And so that's one of those places where we just try to help the young men to see their leadership role is going to be there. And it's just a question of whether they lead well or lead badly. And so we want them to see the kind of experiences we've had in dealing with young men who, again, lack of self-discipline, you know, video games, pornography, chasing girls, you know, you name it, all those things that go on in our culture today, that they may not have had discipline out of them at home before they got there. We won't be very tolerant of that stuff happening in our environment. And we have a very short leash that way. I probably expel anywhere from 3 to 4 students a year. In a small college, that's a ton of kids. But, you know, it's basically the standards are high. And one of the things that I really drums a lot about this part of the school and my job there is that the upperclassmen know what's expected of them. They know that they have to lead by example in a godly way. And they help shepherd the young freshmen along. And so, for example, a young buck who comes in from who knows where, and he just sees every pretty girl as a great opportunity, and he's kind of, and you know, he goes over and starts singling a girl out. The young men in the college will come over and go, "So, have you talked to her dad?" No. Well, then why are you singling her out? You know, what's your intentions there? That kind of thing. And they'll just say, "Look, she's your sister. She's your sister in Christ. She's not, you know, she's not prey for you. She's not, you know, somebody to get her emotional juices all going and everything. And you kind of being on the take. This is not going to happen." And the guys will kind of monitor that themselves. We don't say much about it at all, except the orientation. So the culture's kind of gotten going that way. So we don't have a ton of rules. You know, we're not a rule-heavy institution. It's basic biblical ethics. And a lot of those things just kind of happen on their own.
But we want our daughters to get that.
But that's something that I really, really appreciate. And again, I have to say this, a lot of the ACCS kids, it helps that along. It helped that along.
I'd like to speak more emphasis on trial versus speech and debate.
I'm sorry, really?
Sounds like it needs to be more emphasis on prose style versus speech and debate.
Yeah, I think the speech and debate stuff is really big. It's very popular. But it does not do the job by itself. So if you did only public speaking sorts of things and the debate, you know, get students outside of the debate, that does not necessarily mean that they know English grammar, they have writing skills. But those things need to be honed as well, because they're going to be prerequisite to their abilities and all those other things.
How bad is the prose style that you see in your students?
It's pretty scary sometimes. It can be really boring.
What was the question?
Just in terms of the prose ability of the students coming in. Again, very good students are great, but once you go below that, it's all bets are off. Again, the conclusions, recommendations there. One thing that I mentioned there at the beginning was repeat. Be careful if you look at these numbers. Do not treat them as if they are they were etched at Mount Sinai. The overall advantage, I would say, in terms of the students coming out of ACCS schools, is that there is an important. And I don't want to discount this. There's a very important transitional element that the ACCS school provides to our institution that's really a wonderful thing for the students. So I think we are an important next step for the students to come out of ACCS schools. And that's good. But the thing that I sometimes hear is that because they're out of an ACCS school, they should be far superior. And I just wanted to bring everybody back down a little bit to the reality that your very best, yes, will be very, very good. But by and large, you're going to be pretty much dealing with average kids who've got all the same problems that everybody else does. And if they didn't get that discipline, if the institution allowed too many kids to slide through that didn't get it earlier, and they keep drifting backward all the way through, then they're not superior at all, and you've got to create a problem anyway. And then the key areas that I've mentioned above, I would just encourage you to think about those as places to pursue. Again, I want to just repeat one thing I started with briefly to conclude. The next generation of teachers for your schools, where will they come from? You know, we're supposed to take responsibility for raising up the next generation covenantally. And you ask the question, where will the classical educators, classical Christian educators, come from in the next generation? It's your students who will probably be coming back to teach at your school. And it's to all of our advantages. I mean, again, we're all a young institution, so we've still got lots to learn and lots to grow in. But it's to your advantage to push them harder, faster, higher than you have in the past. Because we have to do the same thing, because we're looking at that. You know, the graduates of our institutions going back and teaching in your schools, and you know, that cycle starting now with the second, third generation, that's going to be important. And so these are things we're in this together. So any of my comments, if they sounded critical or anything, they are only in the spirit of iron sharpening iron, and we're in this together kind of thing. You know, everything you do well blesses us, and hopefully everything we do well will bless you, and that will be the thing that advances Christ's kingdom in this area of education. Again, if you didn't get one of those handouts and you like them, let me know. And thank you for your time today.